Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Spring of Life show. This is Jasmine, your host, and I'm here with my amazing and brilliant and talented co-host, Benjamin. Hey, Ben, how you doing today?
Hey, Jasmine, just lovely. I'm so glad to be on the air with you as usually on Mondays at 8. Just lovely.
Yeah, and I'm really grateful for this platform, bbsradio.com, here in Studio One. Very cool. So I'm wide open today, and I'm enjoying that spring is here. We've had some interesting mists rolling in today. It's been quite a powerful full moon. I was up many times last night enjoying its rays. And what I'm going to offer to all you listeners out there is really a free-for-all. I am going to share with you now our live call-in number. And I mean, you can call us on the phone. You can call us via Skype, your cell phone, whatever works for you is your communication tool. And the live number is 888, that's 888-627-6008. And would love to have you call us and ask anything about, what you want to create in your world, anything you want cleared, anything you'd like to discuss from a point of consciousness. If you'd like to learn how to become more skillful in your world so that you can change things, whatever tickles get your fancy, go ahead, Ben.
Or maybe how you want to master your own timelines, how to play with your own life, with your own world, how to change things, how to manifest almost anything, whether that's abundance, money, a relationship. It doesn't matter what it is. Let it be your heart's desire and give us a call at 1-888-627-6008. And we would love to talk with you because just recently we also went to Mexico and attended a wonderful workshop that just continues building on all the wonderful life experiences and things that we have learned throughout our time. And we have been playing with the law of attraction for quite a while. It is one of those beautiful things that are just built right into the makeup of the universe. And we love to play with it because it clearly explains why we get what we get and how we can get more of what it is that we want, such that we have more creative freedom to play with our worlds in any which way that we want.
And you know, if you don't like the word law of attraction because, you know, it may be, I don't know, overplayed or written about from The Secret, or it just doesn't work for you, or you feel like it's old news, that's cool. But what it's really pointing to is magnetics, and how frequencies and vibrations, and essentially how you tune yourself to what it is you want. Because I mean, all of us have desires. All of us have dreams. All of us want to move forward. It's an ever-evolving, forward-moving, growing universe. And as part of that, as the universe flowing through each of us, it's natural that we want more. We always want more. It's natural that we'll never get it done. I mean, gee, we buy a house, we work on it, we fix it, we garden it, and one day we turn around and look at it and go, oh, wow, everything's done. Isn't it time to sell and start again and perhaps buy another place that needs to be fixed? Or we add another level on, or we add a solarium. The nature of life itself is expansion and growth. And thusly, there has to be desire. Plant wants to flower. It wants to produce fruit. It wants to grow taller. It wants to get bigger. It wants to get thicker. It wants to double its size. It's very natural. So what do you desire? What do you want? There are some people who are actually afraid to want things. And, you know, that's an aspect we can certainly speak to as well, because some of us have a little voice in our head that says, oh, well, I may want that, but I'll never get it. You know, I'll never get that. But what if you could get that? And how would you feel around that? What is it that you want? Magnetically, you can draw to yourself as the creator of your world, because you are, we all are, whether we're creating by default or we're creating deliberately and we're directing the sails on the ship of our lives to the destination that we desire. Well, maybe that's the question at hand for most of us, I would say. And then it comes down to, am I actually, you know, creating it all? And if I am, what does that mean and what does that look like?
Well, you certainly are, no matter what, a vibrational being. You certainly are living in an electromagnetic universe, and you were source energy before you came into this body, and you still are source energy. However, a part of you decided to come into physical form, and thus you were incarnated. You actually did get a physical form, which is so super cool because we get to navigate this third dimensional world. Now from there, we actually have the power to still create anything that we want, because we are creators at the core of our beings. The question is just, how do we do it? Well, it all works through vibration. Through your thoughts and through your emotions, you can see where you're currently at. And with that, getting a greater grasp of how all of this works allows you to actually understand why you see the things that you do see in your world the way that they come about. Because you magnetically, electromagnetically actually, draw them to yourself. You are the attractor of every single experience that you get in your world. And by learning to become a better master of your own vibration, you also will start to become more deliberate in not only your intent, but also in the way that you can start playing with your own manifestations and just have a blast with it all, such that you can have that new car, you can have that relationship, because that larger part of you is actually keeping a record of every single thing that you have wished for, of every single thing that you do want, and it is keeping such a pristine idea of all these different levels of desire that you have launched throughout your lifetime, that it has that perfect vision of you getting everything that you do want, that you have wanted, and that you could want thus far. And it is a constant evolving desire just the same. However, when you do start to tap into that part of yourself, that larger part, when you start tapping into your own soul, that is the point when you actually get the manifestations where those coincidences happen that you just recognize like a snap. And all of a sudden, it is that beautiful thing that you have desired, that you have longed for, and the resistance had lessened to the point where it could actually show up for yourself in your world. And thus, bang, it does.
Bang, I love that. It's like Emeril Lagasse, bam, a little spicy yum-yum in the stew pot of your life. I'd like to speak for a second, Ben. You use the word longing. And, you know, I'd like to define that, because in my book, in the Dictionary of Jasmine, and if you've been listening to us for a while here on BBS Radio or on freedomslips.com on Thursdays between 3 and 5 p.m.
Eastern Time.
Eastern Standard Time. Thank you very much. On
I think we're actually on daylight time now.
Are we? Well, it's EST though, right? Eastern. That's our time zone, right? It's 3 to 5 p.m. EST.
Yeah, well, I think by now it would be EDT rather than EST. ST usually designates savings time. And I believe that's in the winter.
Okay, well, I've never heard that change. So you learn something new anyway. Anyway, 3 to 5 on Thursday on freedomslips.com, Studio B, and our show there is called The Inner Revolution. And if you've heard me here or on that station, You might be familiar with my take on us all, even though we speak the same language, whatever language that may be for you. Every one of us within any linguistic category has our own dictionary. So, you know, the word tree will bring about certain images for certain people. The word love will do that, or marriage. We all have our definitions, our meanings around that, and then subsequent beliefs that are just thoughts we keep thinking around any specific topic for a period of time, and thusly becomes, you know, like that's the way we believe it to be. So I'd like to define the word longing for me, and I'm also a writer, so I'm very clear with my own dictionary, and because words are a tool that I use also as a speaker and an orator. And when I work with clients, I really want to know what they mean by their words, because for me to just take my own dictionary and overlay it onto them can create some interesting dynamics that may not necessarily have us entrained to one another. So I really want to work with their dictionary and get where they're at. And so when I hear, Benjamin, the word longing, I get this feeling that has me, oh, just maybe a moment away from mourning, that I want something. It actually puts me to a state of drama. I can even, I feel it as I'm standing here and I'm looking upon the lake where we live, and I can feel myself going into this theatrical feeling of wanting. And I'm really not into drama. I mean, I appreciate that in writing that keeps me, you know, contained in it, or sometimes in a movie. But in my own life, it really doesn't serve. And even too much, you know, a specific type of drama as well. And so I hear the word longing and it's like, oh, I want it so much, and I need to have it. And oh, if I don't have it, I mean, I can almost feel like I could pull a Scarlett O'Hara in that word and put the back of my hand to my forehead and say, oh, but I still have Tara, and if only I had Rhett to come and save me. So longing for me really puts me in a vibration of recognizing that I'm without that which I desire, where a desire for something and a positive expectation of it, the enjoyment of the journey of it coming to me, has me feel a little bit differently. I would put longing with, for me, Benjamin, in the same word category dictionary of meaning in Jasmine's world as lack or scarcity. It to me has a mourning to it, a pain almost associated with that word. Now that's so for me, I don't really use that unless I'm using it in prose in a very specific manner. For me, it wouldn't go in my desire box of describing something that I wanted or that I was wanting to bring in or feel the feeling of from a creation perspective. What about you, Ben? Does longing, how does that work for you? Because you use the word, so I'm curious about that.
Well, it really depends on where you're at in your own vibration when you say that word. It doesn't necessarily matter on the word itself as much as it matters what place you're at when you actually speak it. In some sentences, it might be, oh, yeah, I have a delicious longing for that. Then at that point, it might actually be something delicious for you. Generally, I hear what you're saying, though, that longing usually focuses on lack more than abundance. But the same thing could be said for desire. For a lot of people, they desire something and they're more aware of the lack rather than the journey toward that joyousness. Because, again, it is very interesting that most of us don't necessarily focus on that joyful journey as much as what it is that is missing in our lives, because the journey itself can feel vastly delicious if we just allow it to. And if we can start to shift our focus on the abundance that actually comes with the journey, it enriches us to the point where when we stay focused on that positive vibration for long enough, it will attract more of that positive vibration. However, if you focus on the lack vibration, then you get more of the lack vibration. So essentially, your outer world will start to mimic whatever your predominant vibration is on the inside. Now, beyond that, we can actually control our own vibration in any given moment, and by controlling it and being more aware even of how it feels to us rather than the words that come out themselves, it allows us to gain that greater control over whether we are actually on the path toward more fulfillment of that deliciousness that is already waiting for you, or are we actually holding apart all this other stuff that is just itching to come our way, that our higher self has already prepared for us. And it's sort of like that a lot of us think that we want everything that we desire right here, right now, when that isn't necessarily the case. That's sort of like saying you want all your life's meals right here, right now, and that's sort of silly. You actually, from a larger perspective, want your meals to come about incrementally, day by day, meal time by meal time, because if you'd have it all right now, you wouldn't know what to do with all that food. So that when we actually start looking at it, you enjoy the journey of receiving what it is that you like piece by piece a lot more from a larger perspective, at least, such that when we recognize such a thing, we can start to appreciate the journey itself from a much greater depth than when we just expect to get everything right here, right now, in one instant. I wish I could just snap my finger and have it all fulfilled. And there again, we're more focused actually on the lack that it's not here already, rather than, ooh, I wonder what's going to come next.
Well, and I agree. And it is, you know, the energy underneath. And isn't that true for most things or all things that we do? It's the place from which we speak, the place from which we move forward, and the place from which we whisper these words or speak them or, you know, cook the dinner or wash the dishes. Are we doing it from a place of appreciation and joy and offering and gratitude and gifting and presence? Or are we doing it from a place of resentment and regret and duty and obligation? And you know, I mean, that makes all the difference in the world. And so I agree with you. And I do notice there's a nuance there, that there's a lot of people who really aren't paying attention to the words they're using. They aren't paying attention to the definitions, the feelings, the vibrations, their own inner meanings that they give to things. And I love that you spoke to the word desire, because for some people that has most specifically a sexual context. And they'll play, they could, I've spoken to people who would place it there. You know, people would say the word wanting, if you're wanting something, you're pointing to your lack. And so really it is up to the individual. And my invitation to everyone listening and to the all of humanity is to begin to develop your awareness about your dictionary, your meanings, your words, and how you feel about things, what it is you do desire, what you'd like to manifest, what you'd like to see created in your world, and how that feels for you. And when you desire something like, oh, let's talk about more money, that's something that most of us, I would say, would always go, yes, I'll take more of that, please make mine a double. And so when we're wanting that, are we really moving into the joyous experience of what it would feel like to have that? Would it provide freedom for us? You know, would it mean you would want to for me, that would look like traveling and generosity and being able to, you know, just come and go and do and share with and buy and purchase and create whatever I wanted with this ever-flowing knowledge that there's so much abundance and I have just so much always present and always moving through. Now, people will often say, I want more money. Isn't that great? But then they'll turn around and go, yeah, but I don't have it. And so when we're focused on that which we do not have, we are only going to be seeing through those glasses, so to speak. We put the lenses in front of our eyes of, I don't have that, or I don't have that relationship. All the good ones are taken, or, you know, at my age, I'll never, or because of the past, this is now going to repeat itself. So to take a look at our dictionaries, at what we define as what we want, and then the nuance of the question of, can I, do I believe I can have that? And then beyond the belief, do I know I can? Do I know that I'm universally supported? And by coming into vibrational alignment, I can magnetize that. Well, I don't even have to magnetize that. All I have to do is just sort of line up with the feeling of it, and the universe as a whole, my higher levels, my soul self, Bob's your uncle, whatever you'd like to call that greater part of the source of who you really are, will do all the detail work. And isn't it nice to know that I don't have to know how it's going to unfold in this red hot minute? And a lot of us get tripped up on our own shoelaces there. Yeah, I really want that, but now I have to do this and this, or how am I going to do that? Well, what if you just waited for inspiration? You stuck with the feeling, and then, you know, momentum would move you in a direction, or open a door, or create a phone call or a connection that would open a door for you that would then provide more momentum in a forward motion for that desire.
So what is it that you desire in your world? What is it that you want more of? If you would like to get a step closer to what it is that you want in your life, in your world, doesn't matter whether it's something of abundance or a relationship, it doesn't matter how it shows up. give us a call. The number is 1-888-627-6008. Once again, it's 1-888-627-6008. And just to clarify what we were talking about earlier, it is called Eastern Standard Time.
I said EST.
And we are, though, in Eastern Daylight Time currently.
Okay, so it's EDST, Eastern Daylight Savings Time? No?
No, it's Eastern Daylight Time that we're in EDT currently in the Toronto area. Some parts of the world or some towns are still currently in EST. However, according to EST, we would be right now at 7:19 and a PM, that is, and in Eastern Daylight Time, we're at 8:19.
Okay, well, my clock says it's 8:19, so anyway, whatever. Thank you for that, Benjamin. You are always on the research, and I actually, you know, I've got a friend here who's on Skype with me while we're broadcasting, and you know, if you want to call in, I would love to have you. My friend's name is SJ, and he's out in BC, but he made a really interesting comment here. And he said, desire traps one in the maintenance zone and most fail there. Now, I wish I knew more about that. If you'd like to type some more, I'd love to speak to that. What does that mean? Does desire traps one in the maintenance zone and that most people fail there? That's an interesting consideration and thought to play with. So desire can trap one in a maintenance zone. SJ, type me some more if you like, or give us a call. I wonder if you could probably call us through Skype. What is it? What is the call-in number? 888-627-6008. And, you know, desire is desire tricky?
Well,
does desire trap? Oh, he's incoming call. Now, how do we do this one? Because it's... Oh, but I can't...
You're not hosting the call.
But if he calls in live on the show, 888.
Yes, then he can absolutely join us. There is no doubt about it.
Okay, so
maybe just chat.
I'm going to write him a note.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the thing about desire is, again, it matters more where you're actually focusing your attention, where you're focusing your own consciousness, because the word itself doesn't necessarily indicate where you are. Now, becoming trapped in something called maintenance essentially to me sounds like you're not really necessarily changing your vibration into anything else than what it has been. Maintaining that same level of vibration then allows you to also not necessarily change what it is that you're getting from your outside perspective. Thus, you would essentially really also not only maintaining your own inner world, but with that, your outer world as well, such that the recreations that you get moment by moment by moment would be so similar, because the vibration that you offer is moment by moment by moment so similar that it would seem like it would be the same. That it is a different vibration continuously, because there are different time moments and thus also different creations over time that you're receiving, but they're so similar in the looks of it that they would actually seem like they are the same. So, yes, please, SJ just joined us on line one. Welcome, SJ, on the show. Lovely to have you.
Hey, SJ, how you doing?
Well, I love to hear you guys on another station. That's excellent. And your website,
sexy,
your website explains, your website basically explains a lot of things that I was wondering about in terms of what you do and where you are and how you contact yourself. Quite interesting. What I was saying about desire comes from my earliest Zen Buddhist education. And they basically said, when you desire, you can become trapped by it. For one thing, if you achieve your desires many times, it strains your person to fulfill the maintenance of that desire. And that's the danger, you know. Same thing with heroin addiction. You desire the high, But you got to pay for the dose, eh?
I hear what you're saying, because there is the concept of desire that is focusing more on that itching part, that longing, as we as Jasmine talked about earlier, that is focused on the lack of what you currently have. And it is similar that actually when you have a hit of heroin, your body gets accustomed to it so quickly that your cells almost instantly as you're coming off of it are on withdrawal. They have instantly pretty much created a new homeostasis, a new base level. And as soon as that base level isn't fulfilled anymore, it is going through what we call a withdrawal process where it is trying to re-achieve that same circumstance. And that can certainly be a trap, but that will most likely only come when you're already working from a paradigm of lack. When you're actually seeing what the Buddhists too try to get to is the concept of abundance. Because a lot of people, for example, I'm going to switch the idea of what specifically we're talking about to money just for another example, that money, oftentimes people say, ooh, I would like to have more money because I'd feel so good and so on and so on and so on. But then they feel how much lack there is of money in their world, and that's the only reason why they want it. However, if for just a moment we take money as only one of the many representations that can be a symbol for abundance, when we then, instead of money specifically, start looking at all the abundance that we actually have in our worlds, whether that is the abundance of words, the abundance of nature, the abundance of air to breathe, the abundance of blood flow, the abundance of so many different things that really are abundant in our world, then we can see the true riches that we already have, and then any other parts such as money that is coming our way will be appreciated with that same gratitude or that same appreciation that we already practiced in all the other ideas of abundance.
And I, yeah. You know, I like that that SJ that you brought up the Buddhist form of.
Well, you know, I think the reason why they presented that to anybody that was new was because at that point we're all young and. Up to a certain point, you spend about 80% of your time thinking about things that are not very Zen-ish.
Like ice cream and whipped cream.
Oh, yeah. And what I've spent a large part of my life doing is using language to regain our control, our enjoyment, our love of life, and language, and desiring a world that is peaceful, desiring things that are positive is not necessarily going to lead you to evil. So it's another one of those things where there's fine distinctions, and you need to learn to discriminate, right?
Absolutely, and self-discernment, and I think that. What comes to me around the Buddhist teaching of desire is that it is perhaps not the desire in itself that could lead us astray or off path or into the tumultuous waters of not ever being satisfied, but perhaps that thought itself. Desire to want is okay. When I'm hungry, I desire food. I desire a glass of water. And there's nothing wrong with the desire itself, but perhaps when we get bound up and caught in the mental realms, the mindy realms of the considerations that, oh, I'll never have it, and I need to have it, because if I don't have it, you know, the definition of the identifying of the self in regards to the attainment of the said desire. And that doesn't leave a lot of room for source or the universe or higher selves or other people or any way in which the universal magnets want to work for us, because we can get awfully entrenched in a way in which it has to unfold. I desire that money and now I must have it, because if I don't have it, then I'm not worthy and I'm not good enough and I won't be able to have that, do that, buy that, or get that. And I think that's where that trap can come in, that can create some real problems for people, as we see when we look around about what's going on. And then we covet the things that we get, and because we have a fear that perhaps there isn't ever going to be more.
And I I believe that behind the Buddhist idea of desire specifically, they have that idea that when you desire something, that's only because you're lacking it. You wouldn't be desiring it if you already had it. Such that in their specific definition, that's also why they say desire leads to suffering. But not recognizing that you can also for yourself have a desire, or look at desire in a way that doesn't lead to suffering. So here we need to look at the effects the words have within ourselves, because it matters more what it creates in our inner world experience than necessarily just the word itself. And for them, the important part was that desire leads to suffering. So they're specifically talking about that desire that is based on the lack of something and being aware of the lack, which then always leads to suffering. That's just natural.
And leads to coveting.
Well, you know, one of the things that they were trying to talk about and teach young people, I'm thinking of myself back then as a Zen novice, you know, getting a grip on the ideas, the concepts, the structure, the philosophy, the end goals. And they were trying to get people into no mind states for a number of reasons. They wanted to give them relief from thoughts that dominated their thinking. They wanted to free them up. And almost everything is related to the end goal of to find your place in the universe and be comfortable with it, right? That's pretty much what I got out of Zen. I think that's probably enough.
For that's quite true, actually, because there is a very powerful experience with the no mind experience, in so far that the only issue there is in the first place that holds us back from getting what we want anyway is resistance that we hold most often through our thoughts, because life has a big, massive flow of well-being that is coming our way all the time anyway. And if we wouldn't hold on to the resistance, then we would receive all the goods that we want anyway. We would have all the beautiful things come our way. However, because we have so many resistant and contradictory thoughts, we don't always get those things. And thus, entering a state of no mind also brings us to a place of not holding on to any resistance at that moment, not negating that we're somewhere where we should be. Otherwise, we often say, no, I shouldn't be here. I should have more money. I should, when we should all over ourselves. When really, when we just let go of that resistance for long enough, things will start to trickle into our experience almost immediately, even if that's just a different set set of emotions, a different set of nature's responses. It doesn't really matter, but those signals and signs come very quickly if we enter this no mind experience for a while, because most people are so full of resistance that a little bit of no mind already gets them on the positive track. Until then, all of a sudden, they start thinking again, their old thoughts, that all the habits that they had before, and it enters back into their lives. But we can, no mind is only one starting point for a lot of people. There is so much more on the other side when we allow ourselves to actually gain some positive momentum. Then things become a lot more deliberately positive, because now we're working with the flow of creation, and we have the power that creates worlds move through us deliberately rather than holding on to resistance.
Hey, well, are you familiar?
Go ahead. Go ahead, SJ.
Oh, sorry, Jazz. You go ahead. It's your show.
Oh, I was just going to say, well spoken. And, you know, this... The Buddhist concept of letting go of desire because it leads to suffering, and I add to that coveting, because I feel that most people, when they are in a state of desire, they are desiring something outside of themselves. They are desiring an object. They are desiring materialism. And that's great. But ultimately, what I've come to know is the only reason anybody ever desires or wants anything, whether that's a relationship or a car or a bank account or better health or a new pair of shoes or a good mortgage rate, is because they feel it'll make them feel happy. What they really want is the emotion that they attach to the concept and idea of receiving that material thing. And so perhaps in the Buddhist teaching, wouldn't it be fun to add on that the desire in itself is a wonderful thing, and aim it in any direction you want, and really recognize, using the tool of the mind, that it's really about the emotion that you want, that internal state of freedom and joy and lusciousness and thriving and excitement and eagerness and creativity and peace and well-being, to know that all is well. How could there ever be any reason we ever want anything, even on a global perspective? Why do we want, you know, a good food, or we want this, the corporate political dominance to stop? Because we feel that we're going to feel better. We feel we'll be freer. We feel we'll have more rights. We feel we'll have perhaps the ability to come and go more so as we please and not be dominated, that we'll be have more control in our lives. That's why we want the outer circumstances to change. We want that sports car because we think all the chicks are going to love it when we're driving up and down the street on a Saturday night when we're teenagers. And that's going to bring us a sense of what? Virility, or feeling powerful. Or so it's really about, I see their teaching, for me, that's the way I interpret it, that it's about letting go of the outside object. But, you know, when we find that inner joy, we recognize that any desire only leads to an emotional state of how we really want to feel connected to who we really are and all that is, and have that knowing that we are supported and the universe is benevolent, then that's the rest that comes materially from that state, is just sprinkles on the proverbial sundae of a joyous life.
Well, you know, what I see is the challenge for the 21st century is a form of martial art where people learn to think as a discipline, as a work of art, as a brilliant harmony with the entire matrix around them. Yeah, we'll see it. It's emerging. It's certainly, I certainly advocate it.
I love that. How beautifully put, SJ. I feel that too. The tool of the mind is brilliant, and it's really to develop an awareness of our own awareness. We can then direct the tool of the mind, and the mind has been given a bad rap and spoken of in egoic terms and blah, blah, blah. And some of that is true. There's no doubt about it. I get that. And it really is a brilliant tool. Where would we be without it? Some people would say, oh, peace and love and Landry, really? Would you be working a computer without the mind, or driving the car? I don't think so. It's a tool. And the thing is, most people have this brilliant, amazing tool of a mind, and they've plugged it into this energy source like a jackhammer, and they've turned the on switch on, and they let it just jackhammer through their lives and let it run the show. That's akin to giving a four-year-old the keys to your truck and say, you know, go for it. Here, drive my life. And then we wonder why we're smashing into things and things aren't working out. Because we have to learn, I love that, to be the director of the tool of the mind, to learn how to direct our thoughts, to use the GPS of the emotions, and to tune into the fine signals that come from this body apparatus, this body vehicle that will always let us know if we're on track or not, if we need to turn left, pull a hard left, or do a U-turn. And I love the way you've put that, SG. I do think, SJ, I think that the learning how to think is the next, it's manifestational creative martial art. Is it a martial? Yeah, I like that.
Actually, it feels very much like Aikido.
Yeah.
Well, it's like any discipline. The interesting thing, probably, the most interesting thing I found in researching that idea is that many other shamans are aware of that as a necessity. And they talk about the capture of the mind for the generation of negative thinking as a resource that spirits, as they think of them, gather and feed on. And I thought, well, irregardless of the spirit part, that kind of gloom and doom thinking, not that it isn't relevant sometimes, you know, I'm not abandoning the need to accumulate data, but pursuing it and ignoring all the positive aspects of the universe around you sort of puts a real bias on your thinking that I think is detrimental.
Yes, I totally agree with that. We are constantly, actually, with every single thought that we do practice, quite literally practicing the directions in which we go within our thinking, within our creation of our own world. And I love that science is actually starting to catch up with some of these concepts a little more and more. However, what they're still missing out to a large part is that we not only are living in a collective universe, we often see that there's only that world out there, which seems to be separate from our world in here, but they're not really that isolated. It is the case, actually, more so that we do live in this hologram, which the inner is a reflection of the outer, and the outer can also become a reflection of the inner. However, it really matters more so that we learn how to direct our own inner selves, because when we start to get a hold of where we're at vibrationally, that emotional feeling sense, then we also start to get a hold of where we are creating. What is our point of vibration? What is our point of attraction? It is a whole nother sense that connects us to a whole other world that has been neglected. That's sort of like saying, hey, we've got four other senses. We just shouldn't use our eyes anymore. That's just really silly. And when we start to actually understand and purposefully use that emotional sense, which connects us back to our spirit worlds, like the shamans and the Buddhist, and essentially pretty much anyone that allows themselves to reemerge into that, then we actually start to become the deliberate creators again that we came to this place for. And then we start to feed a whole new paradigm back into mass consciousness. When enough people do this, whole sets of mass consciousness will shift as well.
Oh yes, I have an interesting theory. If Jasmine, it's your turn next, what would you like to say?
go ahead. I'm curious to know about your theory.
Okay, I'll preface it with a little bit of explanation. I was born a Catholic, into a Catholic faith, and later on explored.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Nothing wrong with it. It was, well, there's a lot wrong with it. When I started to question all those things, like the 12th century mistresses of the Pope, and I was sent to a brilliant, unknown to me, the quality of this mentor that I was sent to, my parish priest, who I came later to find only 3 years, 2 years ago, that he's a noted religious scholar that was often in Rome doing research and discussing his knowledge with people also doing research into early Catholic Christian heritage, history, mythos, all of those, and he explained how all those differ. He taught me discrimination and a lot about truth, and I started to explore, as a religious scholar, every other religion that I could come up with. And I've, in my own preaching as a Universal Life Church reverend, and I became one because that gave me legitimacy to be able to think about religious and all the issues related to it. So in my thinking, I have often heard people maintain that God is in all of us. And I thought, well, you know what makes a lot of sense and seems obvious to me is that we are all a part of God. And that consensus of thought and belief and action is God as he is currently. He's all of us at the same time, which would explain quite a bit of the confusion related to God. Over.
Over. I love that. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's a lighthearted way of looking at God, but a lot of people have enjoyed the concept that maybe we create the universe around us, and it's a possibility. And certainly, I got a chance on my bucket list to speak to one of my favorite late night hosts, Art Bell.
Oh, and, nice.
When and I told him about this. It was really fun. And he got a chuckle out of it, but I think he also left going, you know, that could just possibly be the nitty gritty of it all, you know?
Well, it makes sense to me. I mean, it makes sense to me that we are influenced as Source, and Source having this experience here, and also we are in all that is, and all that is within us. And I can't imagine how it could be only one way and not the other.
It
would be all that is experiencing itself through each dynamic, interesting perspective in order to have new experiences, to have new perspectives, to have new adventures of discovery, and thusly moving forward and growing. That's evolution, yeah. I would think.
Yeah. SJ, have you ever studied sacred geometry and the flower of life?
I was hoping you were going to go there, Ben, because that's so brilliant right here.
Well, all of the symbolism of belief has been an interest of mine. What I started out doing was trying to figure out how people think, why they think, what they think about, how they resolve their own internal.
This is neat. What actually, SJ, Ben's got, he explains it really well. I was going to go there, Benjamin, but you do such a brilliant job at it. This would actually perhaps platform and bolster your perspective about what you just spoke of about God. So go ahead, Ben.
When we look at the flower of life and how it is created, it looks at how spirit in empty space would move. For example, and when we start to play, I mean, I could probably fill a whole show just with that particular part, so I'm going to keep it sort of brief. Now, the thing is that all creationist stories, especially the ones in the Bible and even the ancient Egyptian ones and so on, they all mimic how the flower of life is created simply due to the fact that there isn't a single organism in the entire universe that we know of that doesn't move through the same pattern that the flower of life goes through. Meaning, for example, it starts with one sphere, then moves to two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, and continues moving on like that. Now, the thing is that there, again, isn't one particle or one organism in the entire universe that doesn't mimic that same type of cell organism. Now, how I would say, though, that, for example, we create a mass form is essentially, well, spirit wanted to experience space, and thus it started to create the one. But the one has no reference point in order to experience itself. Thus, it started to create another. And now, geometrically, when you look at that, it creates the Vesica Pisces, which also creates light, which mimics, again, on the second day, light was created. Yet it continues from there because two isn't quite fun enough. We want to have more. So there were four cells after that, and then eight, and it continues moving on and on and on till we have the infinite variety that, or seemingly infinite variety that we currently have in this world. Now, the thing is, all is still made up of the same spirit, and even science is starting to catch up through quantum physics, for example, that there is a unified field, the sort of backdrop upon everything. Upon which everything is played out. Now, the thing is, though, that since the unified field never gets to be outside of itself, it can't necessarily experience itself in its pure form. Thus, it has to create and dissect itself into all these other individual parts in order to at least be able to experience itself from other vantage points, or to be more precise, pieces and parts of itself from other vantage points. That's also why it's so difficult to get a grasp of the idea of God, because you're never outside of it. It's like a fish in water. You can't really get what it's like to be in water unless you've come outside of it. Yet, since we're always going to be in the unified field, it's really tough to get a concrete, wholesome grasp of it, at least. Now, the thing is that, yes, I very much do believe that we do create with our thoughts. I also believe that we do feed our thoughts into mass consciousness. But again, what I would be even more precise with is that it's not our thoughts that keep us alive, but that life force that we that the Asian cultures often call chi or ki, or it depends on how you want to pronounce that. But there is a life force essentially that keeps the heart beating. And that is also what keeps prana. Prana is how it would be from a more Indian perspective, for example.
Spirit, if we're going to go Christian.
Yes, yeah, spirit, for example. So the thing is, though, that we all have a tap into that. The thing is, though, depending on the quality of our thoughts, we either get to tap into it more or less. And it is even more important to become aware of where we are emotionally and where we're in our feeling realms, because that is much more of an accurate feedback whether we are tapping into that type of an experience, because you can feel it. When you're thinking thoughts that align you with your own spirit, you feel more vibrant, you feel more alive. But when you are cutting yourself off because you're thinking life-denying thoughts, at that point you do become more depressed. You are less lively. It is almost like you're standing beside yourself. Quite literally, then, it's because you're pushing your own spirit energy outside of yourself. So God perceivably will still catch what you're saying there, but is not not going to align with that because it's not life affirming. And you can feel in any given moment how much spirit energy you are channeling into your body. And you can feel that the quality of thoughts that continue in a stream of consciousness to flow into your body are much more pristine, much more fluent when you're tapping into that lively energy. And that is more a thing of recognizing where you are feeling wise in combination with thoughts, but it's not necessarily just one or the other, but the emotions are providing a much more accurate indicator of whether you're tapping into that type of a spirit channel or whether you are off track and cutting yourself off. Because you can't cut God off God. That's impossible. It's always there. It's only a question of whether you are cutting yourself off.
That was beautifully said. That's the clearest description of that, of the tree of life and its related intrinsic connections to us that I've ever heard. Well done.
Thank
I would
you.
Say... Yeah, what I'd like to talk to you in the future about, I think we're running out of time here, but what I'd like to talk to you about in the future is how belief and science are building coalitions, working
mm-hmm.
together, especially...
Mm-hmm.
Best example is the placebo effect.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because placebo works almost as frequently as chemical materials, which are regarded as material, and they have clear effects on our bodies. However, especially when we take hypnosis effects or something like that into account just the same, then we start recognizing that we have the power to have our bodies respond the same way as if they had actually taken that material. So simply the belief that something works can have the same effect on your physical body material as the actual real thing. Or when we want to look even further at that, have you heard of the double slit experiment?
The double what?
Double slit experiment. I can send you a link to that on YouTube. Even if
just
you just go online and type in double
Schrodinger's
slit.
Box.
Pardon me?
Schrodinger's box double link experiment?
Similar, not quite the same, but essentially it is looking at that whether particles react as waves or as particles in a microscopic realm. And thus, they have found that the simple act of observing something changes the outcome.
Yeah, so you lead to the final conclusion is, who is there to observe the universe? Who is there to observe God, as a matter of fact?
Well, there we are back at God observing pieces and parts of itself through us. It is observing itself, but it can never quite get the fullest image of itself because, after all, we're still talking about a unit, about a cohesiveness that goes beyond all the individual parts. Yet we are it, we channel it, we are able to pull it through, and to a certain extent, we gain the power to create worlds when we tap into it, rather than cutting ourselves off.
And SJ, I've just pasted into your Skype window my favorite version of the double slit experiment from YouTube, which is the Dr. Quantum version, which was, I believe, initially featured in What the Bleep Do We Know, that movie. Now, we have 1 minute of airtime left. And
thank you.
I want to say thank you. And SJ, maybe you'll, thanks for joining us. Like, what a treat. Thank you so much. It's always nice to connect with you. And you know, you're welcome to join us as well next Monday here or on Thursday, Rev Radio, freedomslips.com, Studio B, Inner Revolution. Ben, it's been a blast. Doug, thanks for engineering us. We got 30 seconds. And
yeah, thanks, Doug.
if you want to see anything else that's coming up for us, there is springoflifecenter.com. It'll list everything that we offer. So please come and visit us. Thank you so much for hosting the show, Jasmine. Thank you for doing the support in the background, Doug. Always appreciate it. And thank you, SJ, for joining us. It was so lovely to have you on the line with us.
Back at you.
Ciao.